What is up, everybody? This is the Primal King Podcast, and this is episode number 31. All right, so really excited to have a guest on today. It's actually an in-house guest, so hopefully the sound is good with that. It's someone who's my neighbor, but also someone who has accomplished a ton of really cool things and has a ton of value to be able to share with everybody out there when it comes to shooting, when it comes to business, when it comes to just being a good guy. So I'm super excited to be able to talk with my guest today. I hope y'all enjoy it. Let's get started. So the question is this: how do we live the best life that we can with the limited amount of time that we get to be here? Is it by accumulating success and fame and fortune and everything else that society tells us that we need in order to be fulfilled? Or is it much more simple than that? My name's Derek Wilson. I'm the host of the Primal King Podcast, and we're going to be answering this as well as many other questions as we move forward. All right, so super excited to have, well, first of all, my neighbor, basically, right? but this is someone who has been a part of multiple businesses. In fact, helped grow a construction business to a huge number. We won't get quite into that. Then from there, kind of had a similar, experience as me. Ended up getting into the shooting world, following his passion. Has since gone on to win multiple long-range rifle competitions. He has been a national champion, a lot of other accolades as well, and now he actually helps train our military teams. So, again, super excited, and just so you know, he is in the house, but we are socially distanced. There's at least 6 feet between us, right?
There's 6 feet.
Awesome. So, super excited to have Mr. Brian Morgan on. Brian, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
Good. So, we've just actually, the cool thing about doing the in-person versus, you know, Zoom or video is that we've just been sitting here BSing for, I don't know, like an hour already. So we got to talk about a lot of different things. But I guess just to start with, if we could go back, what got you into like the shooting side of things? I know you talked a little bit about passion, but if you could maybe just explain what long range is shooting, maybe for what people, you know, that don't know that, and just kind of how you got into it.
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up in a different time. I'm older, so I'm 48 years old. And, you know, kind of when I came up as a kid, it was pretty common to have guns, you know, at home, at school even. You know, they were shooting teams at school, which sounds crazy nowadays. But it was always something that I enjoyed. It kind of challenged me, and I always was focused on the longer range kind of stuff, getting into the environment, the winds, the distances. From very, very young age, you know, from a BB gun trying to hit the barn that was, you know, 300 yards away or whatever, lob BB out there. But the as I got older, it was a way for me to kind of take the stress away from normal job, normal work and whatnot. Like you said, I kind of came up doing the construction thing. Worked with in a family business, and there's a lot of stress in a family business, obviously. But so that was kind of my hobby on the side. And just kind of continued that hobby throughout the years, and kind of the hobby kind of ended up becoming a job, if you would. Had a lot of success in the shooting competition world, and started getting those phone calls from, you know, certain units and whatnot that were just wanted me to work with them to kind of show what I was doing differently than them, to kind of help them with what they were doing. So
that's so cool. So you actually, though, you were telling me that you started off in construction with your dad. So how was that? How was that dynamic? Because I've talked a lot about, you know, my dad, and we actually just talked a lot about as well. When you work with your dad, or maybe even just growing up sometimes, it's like dad will take care of everything. You actually lost your dad at a fairly young age. What was that process like for you? I mean, everybody's heard all about mine. What was that process like for you?
Yeah, I was pretty fortunate. So, you know, just like you know, most kids that grew up in a family business, you know, my summers when I wasn't at school was going to work with my father, you know, and he always, construction that he did, we dug tunnels, actually. We did a lot of tunnels and pipelines and those kind of things. And so we would go out of town with him during the summer and just go to work. And it allowed me to, at a young age, kind of have a ton of respect for him, to kind of see what he dealt with on a day-to-day basis. And then as we got older, you know, and it was me and my brother, you know, for the most part. And as we got older, we started kind of helping filling in those roles where he needed us to, you know. And once we got out of school, we just kind of jumped in the family business and went to work.
No college?
No college. Yeah, okay. Just my father. It's actually a funny story. My father used to tell everybody that he got his undergraduate work at the University of Tennessee because he actually tunneled under one of the buildings at the university. So he did tunnel under the graduates there. But no, it's you know, it's, you know, the school of hard knocks. You know, I mean, I'm a firm believer in trade schools and those kind of things. I don't think college is for everybody, and it wasn't for me for sure. You know, I remember being 17 years old and the way my father taught me how to do things was just kind of threw me in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I had to figure it out. You know, he wasn't there to tell me how to do things. He was just there to, he was more like a good example would be like, you know how you go to the bowling alleys and they got the little bumpers that pop up on the sides. Yeah. That's all he was. Keep me from going in the gutter basically, you know? Yeah. And so, we got dropped off. One of my first projects was working for I'm trying to remember the name of the big engineering firm, but it was for NASA basically, and it was running a pipeline out to the launch pads down in Cape Canaveral, and it would just dump water out there and some cooling water and whatnot. So when the space shuttles and the rockets would launch, and here I'm a 17 year old long haired kid, you know, on this huge project. And that's kind of how we would learn. He'd just throw us out there and we'd go to it. But it was good experience, you know, always working with him. He didn't bark orders. He didn't demand respect. He just earned respect. And, you know, I look back now, those were all, you know, very good memories. You know, even when the jobs didn't go well, it was always a good memory of, you know, my time I had to spend with him. And I wish I had more time like that now. Like, he passed away when I was 27. And I remember, you know, me and my brother sitting there. And, you know, here we have this business that we've got to run. And even though me and my brother took a lot of the load by that point, it was still, you know, he was such a solid figure that we relied on him. And we didn't really even realize it until he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I remember we went and bid our first project after he'd passed away, and you know, it's pretty scary to think to build this big project without him involved. And you know, but you know, I was fortunate to also have a brother that we had a really good working relationship, and just kind of pushed forward from there. And we went from, I don't know, it was probably when my dad passed away, we were actually having a pretty hard time when my dad passed away. We had a coal mine that was struggling. We had a couple of projects that wasn't going the way we want them to go. And, you know, we would continually think, you know, like how our father would handle that, you know, and we just put our head down and went to work. He was pretty impressive. But we ended up building the business up to a point to where it got more than what I wanted for sure. My brother is a phenomenal businessman, but I'm kind of a ditch digger kind of mentality. I just, you know, just go to work kind of guy. So, you know, we grew it to about $100 million a year is what we were doing. And we had offices up in Minnesota and Baton Rouge and Knoxville and Florida. And it was just me and my brother. We had some phenomenal people that worked for us, but, you know, we still felt that pressure. And I had a hard time with that many employees and that many places. And I had a hard time with trust because we had other people doing things that I used to do, but I couldn't do everything. And, you know, it just got to the point that I knew we couldn't continue to, at my level of ability, I didn't feel like I could take the company to the next level. And so we ended up bringing, sold a good portion of it and brought some investors in. And, that was literally right before the crash of 08 and whatnot. So it was kind of, good timing, if you would. Yeah. So, and my brother's still doing that and doing that kind of business. And I've just kind of went to do different things. So
what would be, like going back to your dad, what would be one lesson that you feel like you really took away from your dad?
The number one thing, and this is, cause I saw him do this so many times. And I get emotional talking about my dad, but the one thing he would continually help others, like unbelievably so. And they would continually do him wrong. Mm. But it never stopped him from helping the next person. He just continued to help anybody that needed help. I remember a story. It was my father had already passed away. And one of his closest friends. It was actually his sergeant when my dad was in the Army. His name was J.B. Thompson, and J.B. was pretty sick, was passing, you know, was getting close to passing away, and me and my brother went and sat down and talked with J.B., and he told us a lot of things that had I not taken the time to go sit down and talk with him, I wouldn't have known. And back in the 70s, very, very tough economical times, and my dad was young, you know, and he's a, you know, here he is a father of six trying to provide for his own family. And he'd lived in, you know, we lived in East Tennessee at the time, small towns. And my dad would go find work, you know, and then go gather up men in the community and they'd go out and work. And he, you know, I remember JB saying that if it wasn't for him and his, you know, his efforts, that a lot of families would have not been able to make it, you know, during those times. And my dad was the type of guy that he would go out, have his job for the week, work all week long, and literally driving back home for the weekend, he would go by a construction site and see some equipment sitting there, and before the guys locked up, he'd pull over there and he would ask the guy if he could lay some pipe through the weekend. If he does a good job, pay him for it, and they'd work all weekend long. And
wow.
And he just constantly was just a, I won't even say a workaholic, because he did everything else he needed to do, but he was you know, just focused on providing for his family. And that's, you know, just always paid attention to others' needs. He always looked at himself last. He never looked at himself, you know, first. And then just constantly just put his head down and went to work no matter what was going on.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you went through the process of building a $100 million a year business by the time you were, what at that time? How old?
35, 36 years old.
35, 30. So yeah. Still... If I do say so myself, still relatively young. So you do that, but then you start getting into the shooting. Now, when I first met you, I would have thought, okay, he was probably a military sniper of some sort, maybe a SEAL, maybe Special Forces. But you actually never were in the military.
No.
So was it something to where when you started doing this, maybe more seriously, where you're like, man, I'm actually really good at this? Or like, what was the process kind of making the transition?
Yeah, it's weird, you know, because like all things in life, we don't have the confidence that we might need it. Like when guys first started calling me and saying, hey, can you show us some things that you're doing? I mean, I looked up to these guys, you know, I mean, I do come from a military family. You know, my father was in the military. My brother was in the military. My uncles were in the military. But because of the family business, you know, I literally jumped in the ditch at 17 years old, and that was kind of where I stayed. But I don't know, you know, it was, like I said, it was a hobby for me. I've never done anything, halfway, you know, like if I'm going to get involved, my wife will tell you, like, I'm terrible at this. Like if I get involved, if I decide I'm going to start doing triathlons, which I did, I'm out buying Cervelo bikes and I'm out running like crazy and I'm trying to compete at a very high level. And if I can't compete, I don't play.
Yeah.
I'm a little stubborn that way, you know, like I've got to make sure that I'm good at it, you know? So, you know, early on the long range, like I said, it was just more of a relaxation for me. And it's kind of like someone that tinkers on their cars, like if they got hot rods or whatever, and they're just going out and working on their engines, you know, it's just something that kind of takes your mind off of everything else. And I've had a lot of things throughout my life. I mean, you know, I did, you know, from flying, I got into aerobatics, you know, flying, I got into racing motorcycles, and I did all these things, but everything, the one constant, I would always come back to shooting. And, you know, once the internet kind of came, you know, because I am old, so the internet didn't exist when I was younger, but as the internet started coming around and some of the old matches that we would do, there would be, you know, just people would just show up, you know, naturally. And then with the internet, these bigger groups started to come out, and these clubs, and then these clubs would turn into whatever, and kind of started going down that road. And like I said, I'd end up meeting some really, really impressive people. And most of them, you know, the ended up being like those silent, you know, professionals, if you would, you know, and just some really good guys. And got to hang out with them, and I'm an old soul. I love listening to stories, and we'd sit around and we'd talk about, you know, their adventures and the things that they've done and the sacrifices they've made for the country and whatnot. And And I just enjoyed being able to help them be better at what they do, if I could, you know. And the hard part initially was convincing myself that, you know, I had something to give. And so just like everything else I do, I got really focused on breaking everything I did down, you know, to a very small level. Because that's kind of what it takes. I mean, you know, I could say, you know, shooting long range, you know, get behind the rifle, you know, squeeze the trigger, you know, proper breath, you know, all these little nuances that we do, pretty basic, pretty simple. And most people are going to get a little bit better just by doing that. But you have to start with guys that are at a very high level already. You don't see these big adjustments in their abilities. You just see small little changes. And so you start working with them on those little small little details. Well, to find those small little details, you got to kind of evaluate yourself and find out what it is that I'm doing differently than them, you know.
Well, and that's the fascinating thing to me, because you're not, at this point at least, you're not training random guys like me who, yeah, I can shoot, I've gone hunting my whole life or whatever, but you're literally training some of the best shooters in the military, right?
Yeah.
Like special forces types people, yeah. You know, people who are really, really good probably at what they do, and they're still coming to you being like, hey, can you help us? That has to, I don't know, like, I would be a little insecure, especially in the beginning, I'm sure. Like, how do you get through that? Do you just get to the point where you believe in yourself so much and you've studied it and you've, I mean, I don't know if you ever truly master something, but you've just done it so many times to where it's like, I know what I'm talking about and I know I can help them? Or do you still kind of deal with some of the doubt?
No, it is confidence. I mean, you got to have the confidence in your ability. And one of the things I do, so with shooting, I always say, you know, you have to be able to do what you teach when it comes to shooting. You know, you can open up a book, study, learn all the little nuances of it, but you need to be able to do it. And so one of the things, I don't, you know, I can't speak for every instructor out there, but one of the things that I do is, you know, I shoot with them all week long. These guys come to me, they're young guys, studs, man. I mean, these guys are the super fit, and they're very, very good. And if they don't know me, I've got to earn that respect a little bit, you know, because they're not going to listen to me otherwise.
How much is it like, I mean, they got a jazzy about not being military too, right? Like, who's this dude? Or do they just have the reputation now that we're...
Yeah, I think now that you know, for the most part, I mean, guys that are coming to me have either heard, you know, or, you know, or been a part of another class that I've taught over the years, you know.
Okay.
And so that's been pretty easy, you know, for the most part. But they know I'm going to shoot with them. And I'm not, I try to, you know, I don't have an ego, you know, I don't care. I just want to go shoot, you know. And I like seeing other people succeed. You know, I enjoy seeing someone else grasp something. I love seeing the light bulb go off, you know. And so it's, you know, it's just, I don't know, it's different. It is hard to explain, because I'll teach classes from, you know, four, you know, guys all the way up to 30. Mm. And sometimes I feel like I'm the, you know, like a run around with a chicken with its head cut off. And so it's one of those challenges that you know, we face on a weekly basis. We train about 35 weeks out of the year here in Idaho, because I take the winter off. I've got to, you know, kind of recuperate a little bit. And my wife, you know, you've seen my place. And yeah. I know a lot of people listening probably don't, you know, understand kind of where you live, for that matter, or where I live. So we live out in the middle of nowhere.
Rough terrain, man.
Yeah, it's really rough terrain. But my wife ends up taking care of everybody throughout the week. So, you know, she's cooking, I mean, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, which allows us to train more, you know, which allows us to be able to focus our training. So the guys aren't thinking about what are they going to eat for lunch. So we come in, we eat. We'll usually teach a class while we're eating, for that matter, because I'm trying to jam. Your average course is about 5 days. I've done some 20-day courses and whatnot. But for the most part, you know, teams will come in for 5 days, and I'm trying to give them as much as I can over that five-day period. So, you know, it is nice. A lot of the stress is reduced because I've got my wife there as a help meet, you know, which is huge, you know, and she's kind of the icebreaker too. So if a team comes in I don't really know, she's asking a ton of questions and, you know, kind of doing that. She gets everybody's names and I don't, you know, they're shooter 1, 2, and 3, you know, and she's already got their names down, and we're playing cards in the evening. So she creates that environment. I think that's, it helps me, but it also helps them kind of lower their guard a little bit. It's intimidating. Like if you go to a shooting range there's a lot of egos. I don't know what it is about that. You know, it's like with guns, this ego comes out in people that shouldn't, you know. And at the end of the day, I'm a student of instruction. You know, I'm a student every day. You know, if I go out and I constantly work on things and techniques for myself, not only teach them. So I'm trying to break things down and learn. So I don't know. I feel like I'm learning as I'm teaching, if that makes sense.
Sure.
You know, you do have to be confident, and you do have to have the ability to do what you're teaching, because that's really what's going to give you that confidence. You know, there's not too many questions they're going to ask me that I don't have an answer for. But at the same time, if they ask me a question that I don't know, I'm okay to say, I don't know, let me look into that.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I learned from these guys, is you can't really bullshit them. Like, you can't fake your, you know, there's, what is it, fake it till you make it?
Yeah.
Can't really fake it with these guys. They can read that pretty quick.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do is just be honest with your abilities, and they'll recognize, you know, that from there, you know.
Sure. So you talk about, like, the light bulb coming on, without obviously giving away trade secrets or something, but what, you know, when someone comes to you that's so high in the level that they're already at, like, I mean, is there huge aha moments, or is it usually just like small things? I mean, or is there kind of like the big light bulb moments for people?
So I work with, like I said, I work with different guys that are at different levels. Most of them are, you know, SOCOM level, you know, they're all special operations kind of forces. So it's more elite units, I would guess you would say, but it's smaller numbers. I don't do a lot with like big Army or big Navy. So so I'm working with smaller teams, smaller groups, they're very smart already because of where they are.
Yeah.
They're very dedicated because of where they are. They don't get there by accident. Right. So I already know when they come in that they're a very capable human being.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are really focused, you know, like want to get, you know, as good as they can. Others are just kind of, hey, this is their job right now, and they want to learn what they need to be better at their job, but they know that their job's going to end. So everyone's got a different reasoning to get, you know, to go after it, if you would.
Well,
but
you've got guys come, like some guys that are getting ready to get deployed, right? And then you also get some when they're first coming back. Is that
yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah, I'll get guys get ready, like a pre-deployment train up.
Yeah,
we'll do some of those, and then guys will come back, and these guys never stop too. That's another thing you got to remember, is like when sometimes they want to go on a deployment because their job, their life actually becomes easier, as crazy as that sounds.
Mm-hmm.
Because they, when they're not deployed, they're constantly going to schools. To me and you, it sounds like an awesome school. But to them, they're leaving their family again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's why we try to create the family environment here. So even though they're away from their wife and kids, they still don't feel like they're at a shooting school, if you would.
Sure.
They go to driving schools and shooting schools, and there's tons. And you've got what's called the different schools they have, is like conventional schools, which would be a conventional military school that's put on by the military. And then you have unconventional schools, and I'd fall into the unconventional school. So they get to choose kind of those throughout the year, you know, where they want to go. Long range, you know, is interesting because everybody, they want to be in the fight. And as the, you know, a lot of people forget that we're still at war, you know, and where these people are, so the team has to decide where their best asset is and where they want to focus their training at. Some are dedicated long range, you know, recce units or whatnot. Others just want to have another tool in the toolbox, right? So, but they also recognize the advantage. I've with long range, I think they become better carbine shooters. They become better pistol shooters because they get kind of precision oriented and a thought process on that. But for me, I mean, it's a lot of pressure because I know that they're going to go overseas, and I want to make sure I give them everything I've got, you mm-hmm. know, and that they're, you know, I didn't waste their trip, you know, because that's a big responsibility. Is they're giving up a week of training from anywhere else to come and train with me for a week, and I want to make sure that I do the best I can with them. And so we do some big days, big hours, man. We, you know, 12, 14 hours a day, really crank it out, because it's only 5 days, and there's a lot of information that I'm trying to get to them. And you know, then you've got some that don't learn the same way as others. And so you got to, you know, pull that guy to the side and maybe explain it in a different way or show it in a different way, and until you see that light bulb go off.
Well, how do you balance that? Because I'm sure there's probably part of you that's like, we've got to hammer them with training. We've got to make sure we get them trained up completely. But also, it's like, they're getting ready to go on deployment. Like, they probably want to have a little fun too.
Yeah,
yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we have the time for that. That's the good thing, because they live on site with us. You know, the Misty's taking care of them as far as the food. I mean, she's doing their laundry. She's helping them, you know, to where they can settle in really good. And these guys are, they're fairly young. They don't need a ton of sleep. They're used to not sleeping a ton. So, you know, the days get long, and we have a good time while they're in. We'll break it down. If they've got the ability, we'll go on a fishing trip, you know, while they're in. Mm-hmm. It's just, it depends on what their schedule is, you know. And, okay. And you know, we sit around the table and, you know, like I said, play cards, tell stories, you know, talk about family. I mean, some of the at least for me and my wife, too, is we love in the mornings while we're cooking breakfast, a lot of the guys will be calling their kids up and FaceTiming their kids. And, you know, for me, that's kind of a special moment for us, because I recognize what sacrifice these guys are making. Like I said, it's not just another training they're going to. It's time away from their family, you know, so that's important for me that it's not wasted.
Yeah.
You know, and because I'd rather them be with their family, but yeah, they've also got a job to do. And so we just try to do the best we can with them and create that environment for them. I invite guys back all the time, like whether we're training or not, to bring the family out. And, you know, and we've been doing this long enough now that you know, we have had quite a few guys come through that unfortunately didn't make it back. And, you know, and when you start recognizing them and recognizing the faces and the names, when you see it come up on the news or you hear, you know, it's a tough thing to do. You know, it's a tough thing to think about, that you know someone that was involved in that, you know, and that, and then you know that he had, you know, four kids and a wife, and the main thing for me is I don't ever want to lose that. I don't want to ever take it for granted, you know, what these guys do, you know. And so, and for us, it makes us a very patriotic home, because we see them coming in constantly, and you know, it just kind of makes us remember that, which is good. I love the fact that you know, when we say our prayers at night, that we remember our military, you know, mm-hmm. because they're still out there doing a hard job, that, you know, they're protecting my family, they're protecting my kids, you know, for many years past me being gone. You know, I mean, they're changing the history of the world.
How do you reconcile that? Because it's, for most of us right now, just kind of everyday citizens, we're not engaged in that at all, right? There's just, you'll see on the news every few days, basically, somebody else got killed in Iraq, somebody else got killed here or there. Yeah. And with you kind of being around these people all the time, like, how do we support them? How do we, I know you talked about, like, keeping them in your prayers, but again, like, you know these people, and so many of us, unfortunately, outside of their families, they don't get the publicity as, you know, celebrities or, you know, Kobe Bryant. And I'm not saying one life is more important or whatever, but, you know what I mean, like, there's no notoriety really when someone dies, and it's like you're spending time with these guys. So, like, how do we as a country, like, I don't know, how do you make sense of that?
I won't get into some of the stories I've heard from these guys. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing I always, from, like I said, it's easy for me because I am fortunate enough to be around them. And I look at that as a blessing for my family that I've, you know, I do get to recognize that. And I recognize that others don't, you know, because it's just not part of their daily life. When I was a construction worker, you know, I would pay attention to the flagman on the highway, you know, because I also know what he's doing as a job, you know. So we find ourselves a lot of times, I guess, whatever we do, we recognize that kind of same effort of others around us that do the same thing that we do. It's I don't know if you can reconcile it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I've heard some of the stories, and I've got a couple of guys that work for me. And so I'm not military, but a lot of the instructors that do work for me are military and have done some phenomenal things for this country. But they've also got to carry those burdens with them, those thought processes. And it's just, you know, I just got a lot of, I don't know, I just got a lot of compassion for them going forward, you know, and what they have to deal with as life goes on, you know, the challenges. And, you know, I think for us, I mean, don't forget about them, you know, is a pretty big key, you know, is to remember that it doesn't stop, you know. I mean, they're constantly, like I said, if they're not deployed, they're still training.
Yeah.
And there's just as many, there's a lot of deaths that happen just in training. We just had a PJ down in Idaho, not too far from here, remember? He had a climbing accident.
Yeah.
And so he's going out and getting some climbing in to better himself for the environment that he works in. And an accident happens and he doesn't make it back from that training event. I had a good friend of mine that was a combat controller down in Florida that had a parachute accident, you know, and was lost, and a father with a couple of kids and a young wife, you know. And so we need to remember that even though they're not fighting the war there, they're still preparing to fight the war, and sometimes that's also pretty dangerous. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think when we do, you know, social media, me and you've talked about social media a lot, and there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad in social media. One of the things I try to do is anytime I see that the GoFundMes pop mm-hmm. up, and especially, you know, a soldier that's lost his life or a family that's struggling or injured, then I think we need to reach deep, you know, and we need to support that family. They shouldn't want for anything, you know. And the last thing you want to, you know, the last thing you'd want a young wife to have to think about is her financial stability after just losing her husband. And so I think that's where we as a nation, I mean, that's just something that we should just commonly do every chance we get. I mean, how many things do we waste our money on, you know? And,
yeah.
And when we know that we could give it to someone that truly could use it, you know, there's a lot of good charities out there that help get the, you know, whether it be scholarship programs for the kids, houses getting built for the families or the wounded. And I think we just need to make sure that we as a country, you know, stay on that path of supporting them when we can't, you know.
Yeah, so. I totally agree. Anything we can do to help people who, you know, a lot of us talk about the sacrifice that we make in our businesses and our jobs, but I mean, let's be honest, most of us aren't risking our life.
No.
You know, we're sacrificing time, we're sacrificing other things maybe, but again, it's pretty hard for me to talk about my sacrifice if I'm sitting on a phone call, right?
And, yeah.
And so
yeah.
There are people doing it. So to switch gears a little bit, what's your best story that you could tell us? You don't have to say names, but what's the best story one of these guys maybe told you, and you're like, maybe the craziest story? Again, like, protect the identities, but I know you got some crazy ones. So what's the best one you could share? Because I love, like, I could probably sit here and just do this podcast with former military people, like when I had on Evan Hafer, talking about some of the stuff that he's done and it's here in other interviews. Like, some of the stories these guys say are crazy. Even, I won't say his name, but the guy who was with us when I went and shot with you guys, and some of the stuff he was telling me, I'm like, this is awesome, you know. But like, what's one you could tell us?
You know, I don't know. You may put me on the spot here. Let me think here. I just got to make sure, because some of the guys, I don't know if I can. Some of it, I can't get too much of it out there. But there's some really good ones, some pretty impressive ones, some funny stuff. Like my buddy Scott, he's actually writing a book right now. And I can't remember what he's going to title. It was going to be something like "No Shit, There I Was" or something there, or "I Was There Too, Damn It" or something like that. He's writing kind of a funny book instead of doing all the cool stuff. He's talking about all the crazy stuff that happens, the things that go wrong.
Yeah.
You know, because everyone always, you know, there's always those books out that, you know, this guy was a hard charger and he did this amazing thing.
Lone Survivor.
Yeah.
It's like, there were some guys doing some, like, I to talk about Evan Hafer when he was talking about the prank that he was pulling on people, and I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, but so and that's the thing, is trying to nail those down. I've heard some stories about, you know, guys that you know, needed to kind of get into a certain look to be able to pull off a certain task.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the guys couldn't grow a beard or a mustache, so it's like, all right, he can't go on this mission because he can't look the part, you know?
Yeah.
And so you hear those kind of stories. You know, some of the stuff, you know, whether it be the you know, some guys, there's one I want to tell, but I'm trying to think if I can tell it. But it was a training event, so it should be all right. But these guys were jumping in to a city, and they were going to do a basically a live fire simulated hit on a target, if you would. And everything went wrong. They jumped out of they parachuted in, and they didn't hit their landing area like they meant to, you know. And so they ended up hitting in the trees and got all busted up. Then they went to the house that they were going to set up in to do the hit in the house, or the old building that they were going to set up in. And that one was occupied by a lot of drug addicts. So all of a sudden they had to find a secondary area to set up in. And so everything just kept going wrong. They ended up getting the training done and pulled off the live fire hit on it. And then that evening they were, they had a bunch of young guys on the team, and they were sitting in a bar, and the senior guy was sitting there, and these ladies at the bar come up to him. You know, you got a bunch of young studs sitting there, you know, and these ladies come up and were like, you know, what are you guys doing in town? You know, why are you here? And so he decided he was going to mess with the younger guys, and they've always got like some stories and whatnot. And he basically said, well, ma'am, you know, we are one of the most elite fighting units in the U.S. military, and we're here doing a training mission. And the lady's like, that's a pretty good line. I hadn't heard that line before. And he goes, no, I'm serious. He says, ask this guy right here next to me how we got in here. And this young kid, he's like, all right, am I supposed to tell this or not? And he's like, tell her, how did we get here? And he's like, well, we jumped in out of an airplane. And she's like, no, you did not. And he's like, no, we did. And he's like, no, I'm serious. And then we did this and we did that. And the ladies around the bar are listening to this laughing and like, you guys are telling a story. He goes, no, I'm just kidding. We're here for an insurance convention. And she goes, I knew it. She goes, I knew you guys were lying to me. So sometimes the truth is yeah, harder to believe than the story, yeah, I guess, you know. But no, these guys, I'm trying to think of some other, you know, just some amazing, you know, things they've done. And I always say this with these guys, and at the end of the week, at the end of the training, I try and make sure that they remember, you know, at least that my family can pass on to them, is that, you know, I know them as an individual, you know, now, you know, and when they first come in, it's a team, it's a guy, it's a mill dude. But, you know, at the end of the week, I know him as, you know, Billy or whoever, you know, and I know him as a person and as a father and as a good person. And one of the things I always worry about is these younger guys get so locked in with who they are, with their identity as, you know, a Green Beret or as a SEAL or whatever. That's their identity. It's all that they know. And when they get out, because that time ends, and when they get out, some of them struggle to find that identity, mm-hmm, you know. And so I try and, you know, remind them that they've got a lot of worth beyond what they do. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a job. It's an important job. It's an impressive job, but they're still more valuable than their job.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we can see that, you know, working day-to-day lives. We come home and it's pretty easy for us to be like, yeah, I'm dad, I'm the husband, or whatever, you know, and my job's just my job. But with them, their job has such a high value to it,
yeah,
that sometimes it's hard for them to not be that anymore. You know,
well, that's where some of the struggles come in. You see that so often in professional sports, even, right? Like anytime you have kind of that huge, larger than life persona, and then you're kind of taken away from it. And, you know, a lot of these elite teams, people look at them like they're, you know, I mean, they may not know them individually necessarily, but like I look at them and I'm just like, man, I respect you, because anybody who can go through like Buds and some of these trainings and stuff, like, you got my respect for that.
Yeah, these guys are impressive. Most of these guys, if they weren't in the position they were in, they would be a professional athlete. They would, mm-hmm, be a CEO of a company. They would be those things, because they're
the best of the best in a big pool of military, right?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's washed down to, by the time you make it through that, you're a pretty impressive, yeah, individual, you know. Yeah. And they spend millions of dollars getting one guy, you know, mm-hmm, to be able to have all that training, you know. So it's you know, if you look at, you know, from a pilot standpoint, you know, you look at the F-35, you know, or whatever, it's super expensive aircraft. But without that pilot, it's nothing,
mm-hmm,
you know. And so it's the same kind of deal with a guy on a gun, you know, without, you know, all the equipment, all the stuff, all the ways to get there, everything that they do. But you've got to have the right guy on the gun. And, you know, just like I said, I'm in awe of them every day. I'm actually, so that's kind of with me, I'm always a fan, if you would, you,
yeah,
know? And so when they come in and I get to meet them and I think they recognize that, you know, they'll talk to me about, you know, if they known about like my shooting competitions or this or that or whatever. And that stuff doesn't mean much to me, you know? I mean, it's that given day I shot well, whatever, you know. But what these guys do is really, really impressive to me. And so I'm throughout the week, I'm just, you know, when I show them something and they pick it up super fast, or they're really good at it already and I have to kind of dig deep to get them somewhere else, then it's, you know, that, I don't know. I'm always in awe of them, if you would.
Well, it's got to be humbling for you too, right? Because that one thing that you taught that one guy could go out and literally save tens, hundreds, who knows how many lives, right?
Yeah, that's I get those messages, and I love that. You know, that means a lot to me when, you know, I had a good friend of mine just get back from a deployment, and he had came out here for pre-deployment training, and you know, he took the time to send me a message that said, hey, that thing you showed me, mm-hmm. you know, I used it a bunch on this trip, and it worked flawlessly, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's huge. I mean, that makes me feel really good, and that's the key is, I don't take it for granted, because I'm getting older. There's young guys that do what I do, but you know, I don't kind of just, it's never, the training class is never kind of in the bag. Like I don't just like, I'm just going to do the same thing I did last week or whatever. Mm-hmm. I take each individual person, I see where they're at, what their struggles are with, and I'm just really I try to focus as much as I can on them to get them where they need to be. And so every week, it's kind of like, you know that feeling when you, the first day of school, mm-hmm. after all summer off, those butterflies? I still get those every time a new team's coming in,
yeah.
because but I want to continue to get those, mm-hmm. because that stress, that nervousness is I kind of channel it and I use it towards the week, you know, and to drive myself to get as much done with them as I can.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's kind of my goal.
I mean, that means to me, because, you know, coaching football and stuff over the years, kids would be like, I'm nervous. And I'm like, that's good.
Yeah.
You should be. Like, if it's important to you, you probably should be. Like, hopefully you're prepared enough that those nerves go away. But, like, if you weren't feeling anything, I would wonder if you care.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, yeah, I think, you know, it's, you know, these guys are, like I said, they're very good at what they do. They know that they're good at what they do. But the thing that sets the top tier guys apart from the masses, if you would, is they always have a desire to learn. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they want to know more. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can't instill that into people. You know, you gotta kind of have that. You know, and that's kind of where they're at. They're constantly looking for ways to better themselves. Some of these guys, it's crazy. I mean, they've got, you know, wives and kids. They've got multiple houses that they deal with. I talked to one kid the other day. I mean, talking to a kid now, and he's like, "Yeah, I just bought an 18, you know, apartment complex that me and my wife's investing in." And I'm like, "These guys, I mean, they've got their job, very important job they do, but we forget that they still have a life back here that they also have to manage."
Yep.
And a lot of times, that wife's dealing with a you know, a tremendous amount of stress because she's, you know, she's
running
there with
everything.
The kid. Yeah, she's running, and these deployments are gone, and she's taking care of the entire family. So, mm-hmm. so I think a lot of times we forget the sacrifice of the families too.
Yeah.
You know, while they're gone. So.
Well, I'm sure too, for the guys that you're working with, they probably, I mean, maybe they know a lot of times, but sometimes that's probably like, it's go time, right? Like for the families, or do they usually know kind of in advance, or, I mean, you see in the movies, and I guess it's just ignorance for me, but it's like, oh, got the call, guys, we got to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you work with people who more kind of know for the most part?
No, things come up. I mean, they go out and do a job, you know, I don't know how they balance that, to be honest with you, because
that would be the hard thing for me, honestly.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you can kind of mentally prepare and know that I'm going to be gone and like kind of get your stuff in order at home. It'd be another thing if it's like, oh, tomorrow we're out, and you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. We've had to cancel some courses before because things came up in the world.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I mean, I'm, you know, what I'm doing, it's good training, but at the end of the day, they still have a job to do.
Yeah.
So training's going to come second to the job that they have at hand.
Yeah.
And I've had guys have to, you know, call me up and say, hey, we're not going to be able to make it next week because we got a thing going on. And I'm like, all right. And I'm like, well, let me know, you know, that you guys are all right. And they're like, yeah, just watch the news, you know, or something like that. You know, it's like,
hopefully you don't see my name.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're really there. It's, you know, like I said, they changed the history of the world, you know, and just very young guys. And, just always impressed.
So how far are you shooting? Because you hear long range. Is that, I mean, long range for me, like hunting is like 300 yards, 350, right? But I know obviously when I shot with you, it was a lot further, but maybe for the people who don't know.
Yeah, so long range, you know, so there's you could say it a couple ways. You got long range, you got precision, okay. You know. So I can give you an extremely hard 100 meter shot, you know. I can give you an extremely easy 1,000 meter shot.
So you say extremely hard, 100 meter, what would you say?
Yeah, so maybe in a position, you know, off of tripod, on a boulder, looking downhill, heavy wind, small little target, right?
Yeah.
So that's a hard shot, yeah. You know, but then maybe you're in a field, no wind that day, and the target's at 1,000, it's huge. Easy shot.
I doubt you're doing that training here.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult training here. So and that's the thing, too, the environment yields to what I'm able to have the guys do. A lot of times it's not even, so I'm like from the training side, I'm heavy on instruction, like day one, day two. 3, 4, and 5 is more like coaching, you know, because I'm giving them information and now they get to go utilize that information. So I put as much information early in the week so they can use it throughout the week to kind of, you know, solidify what we're doing. But so, yeah, we'll take teams out depending on what the team's bringing in, you know, weapon system wise. But, you know, we'll shoot out to 3,500 meters here.
Wow.
You know, that one target I got across the canyon all the way over on your side, I think that's 3,500 meters away. But, you know, and that's a super tough shot.
Yeah.
That's a big gun.
What are you
setup.
Shooting at?
That's 50 cals. Yeah, that's 50 cals and some others. But the large projectiles, because you need to be able to see, you know, if this attitude of like, you know, first, you know, one shot, one kill kind of thing, that's not reality in this area.
Yeah.
You know, so we're looking for misses and at those kind of distances. And the way you're going to pick that miss up is energy on that bullet, you know, going into the dirt. So I got to be able to see that miss. I'm not going to make that shot with a 338. It doesn't kick up enough to catch it, you know. So we'll waste a lot of rounds if we do that. 50s are going to let us see it most likely.
Are they actually shooting that far? In the, like,
oh, yeah.
Out 3,500?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's cool because I was, you know, even when I was younger, I had 50 cals because I grew up in East Tennessee and Barrett is right down the road from where I grew up at. And I had those at a very young age. And I mentioned we had a coal mine, you know, and I'd set up and shoot on that coal mine pretty long range. What I considered back then was the extreme long ranges. And so, you know, I've been doing that for a little bit of time. But the technology's kind of really improved over the years, from ballistic calculators to things that let us know what that projectile is going to do at those distances. So our first round is going to be pretty close. We still have to read the wind for a little bit longer. They do have some things coming out that are pretty good about reading the wind, but there's a lot of technology. So we're kind of living in a pretty special time for your average shooter to be able to go out and buy some of the equipment that he can to do some things. When I was younger, a 1 minute rifle, so 1 inch at 100 basically, was very, you know, like a good rifle to have if you had something that shot that well. Mm-hmm. Nowadays that would be like the worst rifle you could buy, you know, I mean, it's like, it's insane. So now we're talking, you know, 0.1s, 0.2 inch groups at, you know, at 100 and you know, 2.5, 3 inch groups at 1,000 kind of stuff, you know, some pretty crazy technology.
So you think about that, and I'm still going back to the 3,500. I mean, I'm thinking that's like 1 3/4 miles.
Is that no, we're talking 3,500 meters. That's like two and a quarter miles.
2 1/4 miles.
Yeah, 1,600 meters is a mile.
Okay.
All right. So 3,200 meters, 2 miles.
So
it's a poke. Yeah, it's a poke. And
you know that's extreme. But
that
I mean,
is
even
extreme.
Even a thousand. Like a 1,000 meter shot, right?
1,000 meter shot is like an everyday shot.
Nowadays. Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's still a long ways.
It is a long ways, but it's gotten to be, you know, you got to have the area. We're blessed where we live.
Yeah,
you know, so I mean, cross canyon shots here out to 1,400 meters. You know, and that's some of the hardest shots you actually do because it's really hard to pick the wind up between the two canyons. You know, some of the angles that we shoot here are pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Which get into some weird ballistics that you got to calculate.
Elevation changes,
all
that.
Yeah. So you got density altitude. I mean, the environment's changing. You're shooting from the bottom of a canyon up to the top of a canyon. You're going through different environmental factors that bullets flying through, and things are changing. But sometimes when you take the guys out, you let them experience that 1,500 meters or that 2,000 meters. All of a sudden, that 1,000 meters seems really easy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it kind of goes back to whether you're a boxer, whether you're a football coach, whatever you're doing. practice should be the hardest thing they do. Mm-hmm. You know, same, you know, the train up before the fight should be the hardest thing they do. The fight should be easy. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same thing here. So we'll push pretty hard as far as like the shots that we do here are really, really challenging. And I hope they never see a shot like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I hope they can get into a better position to where they don't have to do that. But if they can't get into a better position, then they've got the ability to make that shot still yet, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but we, yeah, most of our stuff, you know, we'll go from 100 to 1,200 meters, pretty common, with a basic setup, military setup. If you start getting into like the 338s or the 300 Win Mags or the Magnums or some of the bigger ones, then we're going to kind of push those things out to about 1,600 meters and in. We'll shoot them further just to let guys have that experience, but the majority of the trainings kind of focus 1,600 and in on those shots. So
they can't. I can't imagine they could find a better place to train for some of the elevation changes, some of the cross canyon winds, you know, stuff like that than here, right?
Yeah, this place is pretty special, yeah. You know, and it's you know, I came about, you know, I've been involved in some other businesses, and me and my wife were doing some work out of Salt Lake, and she had came to McCall, and for like this women's art retreat, you know, and she's like, I'd really love you to see that little town of McCall, and it was 7 hours away, but we had a couple of days to kill before our flight, and I was like, well, let's just ride up there and go take a look. So on the way there, she was, you know, looking on her phone and found this piece of property that we ended up buying, and this was what, 4 years ago now, 5 years, 4 years ago, something like that. And so, yeah, it was, you know, whether it be a blessing or whatever, just things for me and for our life kind of fell into position. Mm-hmm. To where we were able to pick it up. And I've been going on some trainings with some guys. So even prior to training with them here, I was still training with them at their locations. And then I would go like a SME with them to different locations. And I was able to kind of see what some of the other places lacked, if you would. Mm-hmm. Going in as a SME or subject matter expert on some shooting to a mountain course somewhere else. And then I get there and there's just no targetry there. You know, there's just not enough for me. And then a lot of pressure on me because now I got to train with them for a week, but there's really no facilities set up. So it was kind of a need for me to end up picking this place up. And I called up a couple of teams that I've been working with for quite a few years. And I was like, hey, is this something that you'd be able to utilize? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. You know, it really kind of took off from there, you know, and we don't do it for the money. I mean, we're blessed and we recognize what it offers them, you know. Mm-hmm. It's the deepest canyon in North America, just across the ridge from us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is the second deepest canyon or something. I mean, it's some craziness.
Probably. It's
yeah.
Deep. It's deep.
And so the angles, the winds, the looks, you got, you know, your north facing areas are full of trees and timber. So that offers a little bit of training aspect. Then you've got all your south and east and west facing slopes are all cleared out, so you don't have to go cut a lot of timber to cut lanes in. So I can just drop targets in everywhere. Mm-hmm. And since we've been kind of locked up, not being able to do anything, all I've been doing is throwing targets on my back and hiking around. I think we've got about 450 targets out on the property now. So that's just, you know, it just gives them a lot of opportunities, mm-hmm. really, at the end of the day to train. So
that's so cool. All right. So in an effort to make sure I'm respectful of your time, I want to wrap it up. So, first of all, I know you don't do a ton of civilian training, but if people want to follow along, obviously you post a lot of awesome pictures, I know, on social media. I know you do some different stuff with guns and stuff like that. If they want to check you out, want to check your training out, where's the best place they can find you?
I hate social media, as you know, but on Instagram, it'd be Hat Creek Training. And then on Facebook, same thing, Hat Creek Training on there. I separate some of the pictures. We'll do a little bit of civilian stuff, but very little. And we kind of, because the guys are going to take more of a priority, you know. And so, but I try and keep that life separated, if you would. And so, yeah, Hat Creek Training. And the other company, the DOD company, is jbmtraining.com. So, okay. But yeah, just check it out and send me a message on there if anybody's got any questions. I love talking to people about shooting. So it's you know. My wife gets frustrated with it at times, but I enjoy it.
So if civilians do want to come out, and it sounds like every once in a while you do a group?
Yeah, I've got a class coming up in May that we put out, and we keep our groups kind of small. Because of the terrain and the area that we're in, most of the courses I set up are more advanced oriented. Mm-hmm. just because it's you know, if you're going to come all the way out here in this kind of terrain, there's not a whole lot of basic that you can do here. Everything's kind of hard here. So it's we'll do a couple of courses a year for civilians that we put out.
Yeah. So yeah, I know I have a lot of people that ask me about it. So there you go. Make sure check them out on social media at Hat Creek Training on Instagram, Facebook. Okay. All right. Last question. You know what's coming. What do you want the legacy of Brian Morgan to be?
You know, I someone, we talked about egos a little bit earlier, and I had some people that, you know, they live to talk about themselves, I guess you would say sometimes. And I try not to be that person if I can. I told someone one time that if whoever shows up at my funeral, if anyone says, "Man, that guy could shoot," I failed, you know, because that is just something I do, you know, honestly. Kind of live up to the example that my father set for me. You know, I like to work, you know, I like to go out and work. It's something I enjoy doing, whether it's this or digging ditches, it doesn't matter to me. I like work. So that I was a hard worker, that I was honest, good father, good husband, you know, good neighbor, you know, that's it.
What more could you ask for, right?
Yep, that's right.
It's awesome.
Yep.
Well, I would reach over and shake your hand, but I don't want to get in trouble. So when you showed up, we did a cool little elbow bump. I think we're good there. But anyways, Brian, as always, man, it's been so good to have you here. I appreciate you opening up, sharing everything. So make sure you guys go out, check out Brian's, even though he doesn't like it, he's still, I don't know, I'm still not convinced it's not Misty posting some of it, but yeah. If it is, either way, it's really good stuff. So again, thanks a lot. I appreciate
you having me.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Primal King Podcast. There is one thing that I will ask you to do. Please make sure that you are subscribed to the show so you get all of the new episodes coming out. Also, please make sure that you rate and review the show so that way other people can have access to this podcast, to this content, and this community. Again, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.